It's 4 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Ray Kugel reporting. Iran reportedly hit by Russian cruise missiles. U.S. officials say that 4 Russian cruise missiles crashed in Iran, falling short of their targets in Syria. There's no information on damage. The Russian Defense Ministry denies that any missiles went awry and that all fired from ships did indeed find their targets. Russia on Wednesday ramped up its air campaign in Syria for the first time, launching cruise missiles from the Caspian Sea. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg calls Russia's military actions troubling.
We will assess the latest developments and the implications for the security of the alliance.
The leading contender to become Speaker of the Republican-led U.S. House of Representatives unexpectedly dropped out of the race Thursday. California Congressman Kevin McCarthy had been seeking to replace House Speaker John Boehner ahead of Boehner's retirement at the end of October. McCarthy's path to the Speaker's office was made more difficult when 2 other congressmen, Jason Chaffetz of Utah and Daniel Webster of Florida, announced their candidacies. John Boehner announced his resignation last month after a 25-year career in the House, the last 5 years as Speaker. United Nations envoy for Libya, Bernardino León, announced agreement on a new unity government for the divided nation, possibly ending 4 years of political turmoil. A member of the Tripoli-based parliament, Fayez Sarraj, was named prime minister. He will have 3 deputies. A total of 6 ministers will make up a presidential council. Rival parliaments in Tripoli and in the east must approve the unity government. And Rwanda Supreme Court cleared the way for President Paul Kagame to run for a 3rd 7-year term. His term expires in 2017. This is VOA News. South Sudanese President Salva Kiir says he will repartition the country into 28 states, up from the current 10. Opponents say such unilateral action is a violation of the recently signed peace deal. Jill Craig reports from Nairobi.
President Salva Kiir says splitting South Sudan into 28 states will help reduce the size of the national government and distribute more resources to the rural population. But rebel leader and ousted Vice President Riek Machar says the president should have consulted the opposition first, per the terms of a peace agreement signed in August to end nearly 2 years of fighting. Machar spoke with VOA's Straight Talk Africa host Shaka Sali on Wednesday.
We wanted to resolve this matter once and for all, but he was not ready.
He rejected it.
A transitional government could be set up as early as November, according to the terms of the peace deal. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
Clashes continue despite the August peace deal, with both sides accusing the other of ceasefire violations. Doctors Without Borders says that 33 people are still missing after last week's U.S. airstrike on the International Medical Charities Hospital in Kunduz, Afghanistan. The medical group says 9 of the unaccounted for are patients and 24 are staff members. 22 people were killed in the airstrike, which the U.S. called a mistake. U.S. Air Force officials say Spencer Stone, one of 3 Americans who overpowered a terrorist suspect aboard a French train last August, is in stable condition after he was stabbed Wednesday night in Sacramento, California. It's unclear whether the stabbing was done by one suspect or multiple suspects. Police say Stone was stabbed during a fight near a popular bar district in the California capital's downtown area. The Nobel Prize Committee in Stockholm, Sweden, awarded this year's award in literature to Belarusian journalist Svetlana Alexievich. She has written books on the human impact of the Chernobyl disaster, the 10-year Soviet-Afghanistan war, and Soviet and post-Soviet history. Nobel Prize Committee Permanent Secretary Sarah Dennius praised the 67-year-old writer as innovative and great, who has mapped the soul of the Soviet and post-Soviet people.
She's offering us new and interesting historical material, and she's developed a particular writing style as well as a new literary genre.
Alexievich is the 14th woman to win the Nobel Prize in Literature. South and North Korea exchanged a list of participants Thursday for a rare inter-Korean family reunion, moving closer to an implementation of a key agreement between the two Koreas. Red Cross officials from the two sides met at the Panmunjom Truce Village, dividing the two Koreas to exchange a list of names. I'm Ray Kugel in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barte, Washington. Today is Friday, October 9th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Nigeria's military says it repelled a Boko Haram attack.
Boko Haram terrorists attacked our location. No sooner than the incident occurred, our troops regrouped and the reinforcement was sent, and the attack was a fail, killing quite a number of the terrorists.
Colonel Sani Kukasheka Usma is the Nigerian military spokesman. Zimbabwe First Lady denounces factionalism within the ruling ZANU-PF party. We'll talk with an Eritrean priest who has been nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize this year for his work with migrants. Hungary is criticized for its handling of refugees, and the International Labour Organization on Youth Unemployment in the World.
The report notes a slight decrease in youth unemployment in developed economies, including in the European Union, Latin America, and the Caribbean and sub-Saharan Africa.
That's correspondent Lisa Schlein in Geneva. And we'll speak with two beautiful African actresses about their new movie, High Fashion. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's post and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Nigeria's army said it repelled attacks by Boko Haram militants at the army base in Yobe State earlier this week, destroying a number of militant weapons and equipment. Spokesman Colonel Sani Kukasheka Osma says the militants attempted to seize the headquarters of the army base in Damaturu, Yobe State. Local reports say about 100 militants were killed in the attack, but army spokesman Colonel Osma tells reporter Peter Clotty the army is still conducting a mop-up operation in the area following the attack.
Wednesday evening, Boko Haram terrorists attacked our location, precisely Sector 1 of 27 Task Force Battalion, located in the Idam, Yobe State, Nigeria. And no sooner than the incident occurred, our troops regrouped and the reinforcement was sent from the brigade headquarters, and the attack was a fail, killing quite a number of the terrorists and destroying some of their weapons and equipment. Unfortunately, three of our soldiers also lost their lives in the encounter. But the situation is now calm because the chief of army staff himself, along with some other commanders, have visited Gedam, where he talked with the troops and told them in unmistakable terms that this kind of incident should never be allowed to happen again.
What specific message did the chief of staff give the residents of Yobe, especially where the terrorists attacked? Because perception is that if the army barracks could be attacked, what about the ordinary civilians who are unarmed and untrained?
You are quite right. People may likely feel their way and could be concerned. And that is why even the reinforcement itself was led by no other person than a two-star general accompanied by the brigade commander. And the essence is to show the people and reassure the troops also that all is being done to ensure their safety and security. And this morning, the chief of army staff was there personally, where he talked with the troops and reinforced them further with equipment and weaponry, and also had interaction with some of the community leaders, where he assured them about their safety and security, and of course, renewed vigor and deployment.
You said three of this army personnel were killed. What about casualties on the militant side? There were reports of about 100 militants who were killed after the army repelled the attacks.
Well, as of the time we visited the location, you know, there were mop-up operations going on and quite a number of dead bodies, the terrorist dead bodies were recovered and some items along the line. However, I cannot give you the figure now because they are still doing the mop-up and for shoot also. We are working so hard. You know, we have this presidential mandate to make sure that we bring to an end the Boko Haram insurgency by the end of the year. And we are working assiduously to ensure the accomplishment of that task.
Colonel Sani Kukasheka Usma is the Nigerian military spokesman. He was speaking with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Abuja. Zimbabwe's First Lady, Grace Mugabe, on Thursday denounced factionalism that she said is continuing in the ruling ZANU-PF party. She urged beneficiaries of her husband's land reform policy to fully utilize their farms or surrender them back to the government. The First Lady, whom some say is angling to succeed the 91-year-old Robert Mugabe, said it is sad that the majority of the farms that were taken from white commercial farmers and given to blacks are being underutilized, resulting in food shortages in Zimbabwe.
First Lady Grace Mugabe today denounced the factionalism that she says is continuing in ZANU-PF and urged the beneficiaries of the land reform who are failing to utilize their farms to surrender them back to government.
Be honest.
People must understand this. If you are given land, you must till it. If you can't, be honest and say that you are failing so the land can be allocated to other people who can fully utilize it. Even the fallen heroes in Mozambique will be happy when they see us using that land.
Addressing a rally in Chimanimani, Manicaland province, Mrs. Mugabe, leader of the ZANU-PF Women's League, called those engaged in factional wars insane, adding that they should stop it before they are exposed.
Factionalism!
Down with factionalism. I said it in a briefing that we had earlier that some people think that factionalism is rife only in the high ranks of the party. But there are people in the grassroots who are engaged in factions. They are dividing the party. I see some are getting very angry because I raised the issue of factionalism. There is something wrong. You stop it.
That was First Lady Grace Mugabe addressing a rally yesterday in Manicaland province. The reporter was Untungamile Nkumo of VOA Zimbabwe's service. A new report by the International Labour Organization finds a slight drop in the global youth unemployment rate. But despite a few welcome signs of improvement, the ILO warns the youth jobless crisis remains acute and is far from over. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva on the launch of the report Employment Trends for Youth Report.
The report finds a mild recovery in the job market for young people ages 15 to 24. It says the global unemployment rate stabilized at 13% in the 2012-2014 period covered. However, it adds, this is still well below the pre-crisis level of 11.7%. In total numbers, the report notes 73.3 million young people were out of work last year, down from the crisis peak of 76.6 million in 2009. Despite improvements, the report says the recovery is uneven across regions and countries. The report notes a slight decrease in youth unemployment in developed economies, including in the European Union, Latin America, and the Caribbean and sub-Saharan Africa. The jobless rate, however, increased in most of Asia and the Pacific, the Middle East, and North Africa. The ILO draws a sharp contrast between the situation in the United States and EU. It notes U.S. youth unemployment dropped from 18% in 2010 to 10% last year, whereas in some EU countries, more than 50% of young people were without work. Azita Berar Awad heads the ILO Employment Division. Awad says youth unemployment levels are highest in the Middle East and North Africa. She tells VOA this situation was related to violence and instability generated by the so-called Arab Spring.
Lack of decent jobs was at the root of Arabs. A spring in many countries, a very important factor. That doesn't mean the only factor. There was the way for democratization, but it was definitely the social conditions of young people. That the situation varies from country to country, but in general, obviously, the conflict doesn't help It's not the optimal conditions and creates waves of migration.
Awad says it is premature to know how the mass exodus of migrants and refugees from the Middle East into Europe will affect the youth job market there. She says it is unlikely that this will have much impact, as young people in Europe and migrants do not compete for jobs in the same labor market. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, October 9th. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 15 and a half minutes past the hour. The Norwegian Nobel Committee is expected to announce today, Friday, the winner of this year's Nobel Peace Prize. Among those believed to be nominated are German Chancellor Angela Merkel and Pope Francis. But a lesser-known name has been getting attention, with some speculating he could pull an upset. His father, Masih Zariah, a 40-year-old Eritrean priest now living in Switzerland. Since 2003, he has been helping migrants and refugees who find themselves in distress while crossing the Mediterranean. He is sometimes called the patron saint of refugees. He spoke about what Pope Francis thinks about his work.
The Pope has good awareness about the refugees issue. He gives big attention for this issue. So even when I meet him in last April, we talk about the situation. He remembers very well because he meets many refugees, even someone from Eritrea, from Ethiopia, from Somalia. So I remember what kind of problems these people he faced during his journey, because some of them he's become victim of human trafficking. So the Pope, he tried to push the international community to challenge this problem. He tried to wake up the conscience of all the world, especially for those who have the power to bring some kind of decision. So to change the policy, to give them welcome, to try how to prevent this kind of tragedies.
And so do you feel that under the leadership of Pope Francis, that priests are more encouraged to take active stances on issues of social justice?
He dropped a lot of attention. So he appealed many times about the right of these people for justice. So I think, yes, he contributed a lot for change, some mentality, some conscience. Even now, what is going now in Europe in these last 2 months, is a good contribution of Pope Francis.
Are you discouraged that this refugee crisis seems to be getting worse instead of improving?
Yes, I try to encourage them to start this kind of journey, but many times I hear from them ask me, okay, give us alternatives. That is when I visit last time the refugees camp in Ethiopia, I discuss with many of them. I give a conference to explain them how is danger this kind of, travel or this kind of journey to reach Europe. But the response I receive from them is, okay, yes, we know it's a danger. We know is not the good way to reach Europe. But he asks, okay, give us alternative. What is our future here? Mm-hmm. We need to have a future. We need to rebuilding our life. That is the point. So why we need to find a solution in the origin country. Otherwise, we can't stop this kind of exodus.
That was Eritrean priest Father Masih Zariah speaking with Salem Solomon of VOA's Horn of Africa service. Amnesty International has accused Hungary of breaking multiple international and European human rights laws in its handling of the refugee crisis. As Henry Richwell reports, thousands of migrants and refugees continue to travel through the Balkans to Hungary every day.
With more than 1,200 refugees and migrants packed on board, another train arrives at Croatia's border with Hungary to offload its desperate human cargo. In the past month, more than 50 trains like this have ferried migrants across Croatia. A new fence is being built on the Hungarian side of the frontier. Until that is finished, these migrants are being allowed through and onward to Austria and beyond. Hosting his Croatian counterpart in Budapest Wednesday, Hungary's president, Janos Adair, defended his country's handling of the crisis.
Egyetértettünk abban, hogy ez a migránsválság egyszerre humanitárius,
He says the two countries agreed this migrant crisis is a humanitarian and criminal issue and a national security question. Croatian President Kolinda Grabar-Kitarovic backed Hungary's call for stronger border controls across Europe. Barbora Chernasakova of Amnesty International says Budapest has broken international human rights laws and European Union legislation.
Hungary, by sealing off its border with Serbia and by introducing accelerated asylum procedures at the border, which results to summary rejections of all the applicants and their return to Serbia, to return to a country where there is an adequate reception facilities. Then we are concerned about the fact that Hungary is criminalizing entry through the border fence.
Amnesty says Hungarian police also used excessive force against migrants the day after it closed the border with Serbia last month, firing tear gas and water cannon at the crowds. Human rights groups say the refugee crisis exposes the worst of Europe's divisions on immigration. Addressing the European Parliament Wednesday, German Chancellor Angela Merkel appealed for unity. EU ministers agreed Thursday to step up deportations of failed asylum seekers. They hope it will stem the flow of thousands of economic migrants arriving alongside the refugees fleeing war and persecution. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Tomorrow, Saturday, a new African movie titled High Fashion will debut in the Washington, D.C. area. And here with me to talk about it are two of the actresses, Princess Jenab Cisse and Wistina Taylor, both from Sierra Leone. First, we hear from Wistina.
Basically, the story is about two sisters running a company that was left by their father. And in the midst of running the company, they have, like, family differences. They have different moral standards. You have the normal and you have the abnormal. I could also say the dysfunctional. So it's in the midst of all that chaos, you're trying to fight family, but you guys are still trying to stay together. But then at the same time, you have a business to run.
And money, the evil comes in?
Of course. You do know there is no way you're going to have a business without having that aspect.
And that becomes the source of what? Tension?
Technically, yes, but the main focus is about the money and the wealth when you really come to think of it.
Mm-hmm.
I never thought about it that way.
Oh.
I didn't. It's just like a realization now. Because technically, all the drama, everything that went on, built onto the fact of the wealth that was left to the sisters.
Now, what is it like to produce a film such as this one for Africa and ladies like you coming from Africa? What is it like to produce, to make a film?
To tell you the truth, it's not easy. But if it's your love and your passion, and you have somebody incredible like Princess Jenab that you're working with, it makes it a little easier. And when you have the support and the talent of the actors and the actresses, especially the crew, you have a fantastic, dope DOP for their content. It makes everything run smoothly. Mm-hmm. It's not easy.
You know, I must say that my wife likes African movies.
Okay.
And so then the question is, why do you make movies, films such as this? Do you make it just for the pleasure or you make it for the entertainment of Africans? And what is the support in Africa for such industry?
I mean, we do it for both. We do it for the entertainment, we do it for the audience, and we also do it to tell stories, you know, because one of the main issue that we talked about in High Fashion, which you'll find out October 10th, is what's happening currently in the world, because it's not a one-sided thing. And a lot of time we believe that Africans don't address that aspect. You know what I'm saying? And a lot of times you want a perfect child, but it's almost impossible to have a perfect child. So in High Fashion, you will see the dynamic between the two sisters, wherein one of the sister is the ultimate perfect. She's educated, she's smart, she can run an entire company with a heart of a blink. Now you have another sister that have issues, but then at the same time, she lived the moral standard life that every parent want their daughter to live, get married, have a family, and all that. So you see that different dynamic. So I think we address certain issue that we think the African audience should be aware of and try to talk to their kids and know it's real. Because a lot of time we tend to turn blind eyes on those kind of issues.
So what does it take to produce a film such as High Fashion, cost-wise, money-wise? So what does it take? How much does it cost to do this?
It's money. So most of the time you need either sponsors, or sometimes if you produce the film, that's why you need to get what you put back in to be able to produce another film. Mm. So I cannot blankly say, oh, it costs $50,000 to produce a feature film. It just depends on the type of story it is, where you're trying to take it, the type of instruments you need, let's say locations, cars, who you're bringing in. Let's say you want to bring the biggest artists in Africa, you have to pay to bring them in. You have to pay to put them in hotel. Roughly, I would say between 40,000 and upwards, depending on how you want to take it, how big you want to go. You can go up to 10 million. You see, we're not at the Hollywood section here, but you see Hollywood be spending 100,000 millions to create a film.
That was Winstina Taylor and Princess Jaynab Sise, two of the actresses in the new African movie, High Fashion. They spoke with me here in our Washington studio. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Friday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with football. Hosts Sao Tome and Principe stunned Ethiopia 1-0 in an Africa preliminary 2018 FIFA World Cup qualifying Sao Tome on Thursday. Liberia and Guinea drew 1-1, as did South Sudan and Mauritania. Today, Friday, Somalia hosts Niger in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. Djibouti plays Swaziland and Gambia face Namibia. Tomorrow, Saturday, Eritrea hosts Botswana. Chad face Sierra Leone and the Central African Republic play Madagascar on Sunday. Malawi host Tanzania, Ethiopia engage Sao Tome and Principe, and Kenya play Mauritius. Elsewhere, the Democratic Republic of Congo's Leopards beat Nigeria's Super Eagles 2-0 in Vize, some 100 kilometers southeast of the Belgian capital, Brussels, on Thursday. While Nigeria's under-17 side, the Golden Eaglets, edged their Argentine peers 2-1 in Buenos Aires. Meanwhile, African champions Ivory Coast play hosts Morocco in a friendly match in Agadir today, Friday. Algeria play Guinea, Burkina Faso encounter Mali, and Tunisia face Gabon. On Sunday, Egypt engage Zambia as Nigeria encounter Cameroon. In women's football, Burkina Faso host Ethiopia in their rescheduled Africa 2015 FIFA Women's Under-20 World Cup qualifying in Ouagadougou today, Friday. Elsewhere, Ghana face Equatorial Guinea, South Africa engage Zambia, and Nigeria encounter the Democratic Republic of Congo. In Switzerland, FIFA President Sepp Blatter, FIFA Secretary General Jerome Valls, and FIFA Vice President Michel Platini are suspended from all football activities for 90 days, with the possibility of an extension for a further 45 days, the FIFA Ethics Committee disclosed in Zurich on Thursday. While South Korea's former FIFA Vice President Chung Myung-yoon, who heads the Hyundai motor manufacturer, one of FIFA's corporate sponsors, is banned from football for 6 years and fined over $100,000. These sanctions could jeopardize Platini and Myung-yoon's FIFA presidential election campaigns. Meanwhile, FIFA Vice President and CAF President Issa Hayatou is acting FIFA President. Hayatou clarifies that he has no intention of standing for the FIFA presidential elections. Finally, Namibia play Argentina in their final Group C Rugby World Cup tie in Leicester, England on Sunday. National pride is at stake as Namibia seek their first victory at the tournament. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa, wishing you all a sporty weekend. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good weekend. We'll see you again on Monday morning. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Rwanda's Supreme Court has cleared the way for President Paul Kagame to run for a third 7-year term when his current term expires in 2017. That is it for this Friday, October 9th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Mark Ouma, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing you a very good weekend.
Next on Let's Talk, arranged marriage. The type of marital union where the bride and the groom are selected by a third party. Join host Sande Shomari and his guests discussing arranged marriage. This lighthearted show covers topics of your interest. Let's Talk comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.